Welcome to the 26th Hey Arnold Anniversary Show with myself, Aaron, and also our special guest, Craig Bartlett. It's now been 26 years since Hey Arnold first debuted on the October 7th of 1996, and we are now going to be celebrating its 26th anniversary. So how we usually celebrate this thing is that we ask all the Hey Arnold fans to email in questions to askcraig@aaronmeta.show, and then we arrange the questions. So we get so many questions that come in, we can't like answer one by one everyone who comes in. So this is what we do: we take the most popular of the questions, we then put them together, and then we just kind of like have a 2 and 3 minute conversation about the subject matter. And so we always lead with a question, then we kind of lead on with a follow-up question with these. In this episode of the 26th anniversary show, we are going to be talking about Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie. We're going to be talking about Hey Arnold season 6. We're going to be talking about the Batakis. We're also going to be answering questions on Ready Jet Go and also on the Party Wagon as well, along with any other business, which is our section of the show where people ask in all sorts of questions that aren't related to Hey Arnold. Anyway, I'm sure you're all eager to listen to what Craig Bartlett has to say, so we are going to go into it right here, right now. Hey Craig, how's it going?
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, it's great to see you again. Yeah, it's been a while.
Exactly 1 year?
Yeah, exactly 1 year. So, but
did something with Patricia in the summer, but I think that was like In the high COVID.
That yeah, was like it was. I think we. Well, I remember the last time we left off, we did the live stream. So that was the last thing I think that we did.
Right,
and then
right.
I think you did something with my fiance now. So I think. Yeah, but anyway, so all the Hey Arnold fans are very eager to get their questions into for yourself. So we are going to cover Hey Arnold the Jungle Movie, Hey Arnold Season 6, the Batakis. We're going to do some fan fiction filler. We've also got some questions for Party Wagon and Ready Get Jet Go as well. So that was
wow.
Very big surprises. And also we've got also extra questions at the end. So anyway, we are going to get straight into it. So Craig, are you ready?
I am ready.
Cool. Let's go for it. We're going to start off with Hey Arnold. So the first question is, in the episode What's Up for Arnold, why does Arnold still have a crush on Ruth despite him being over her in Arnold's Valentine?
You're absolutely right. Valentine's Day is episode 24. And Opera, I believe, is episode 28, A or probably B. And so it actually came later. And so I remember they were both written at about the same time, really, because that was just all second season, just kind of a bunch of stories all getting started at once. And I took the Opera. Steve and Rachel wrote Valentine's. And my intention on Valentine's Day was for Arnold to be finished with Ruth when it was done, because she reveals herself to be, you know, such a surface person and not to really understand anything either. And so when I wrote the Opera, it was kind of at the same time. I just wanted to have, it would seem convenient to have Ruth be there for Arnold to be gazing at her and Helga, you know, to drive Helga to be mad. And so I just left her in. I knew it was kind of too late, but I thought, TV's that way. By the time the show has aired a million times, who cares? In the canon, that's correct. That's a good observation that Ruth comes a little late.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun for Helga. Ruth. Ruth.
I mean, how did the Ruth character come about? Like, what was the backstory to that?
Ruth was, I thought it'd be funny if Arnold was always a little bit out of it. Like he didn't know that Helga loved him. And so I thought it'd be funny if he had crushes on like impossibly older women. And so that's what it started as. Just like, I'll make her a sixth grader and I'll give her really long feet. Because as I recall, my sister Deb, my oldest sister, when she was in sixth grade, she complained. She said, "This is so weird. My feet have grown to full size and the rest of me hasn't caught up." So that was the basis of her design. And she's also, as you can see, she's very Arnold-like in her own head proportions. I even did a drawing later of the two of them lying on the grass looking up, and their heads are like, you know, perfect match.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's, you know, not the girl for Arnold.
Okay. Next question that came up. Why did the color of Miriam Pazaki's dress change from green to teal, back to green, and then to purple?
Wow. That's wild. I know that that has to be true, and yet I don't have an answer for that. I'm not sure why. Normally, you know how it goes. You set the colors of the outfits, and then that's just the way it is forever. It's like a joke, you know. Cartoons are one of it's very meta to have characters even point out that they're wearing the same outfit again, because and for obvious kind of production reasons, we give them one costume and one color to save money. But I don't know. It's a really good question. I'll look into that and see which director needed Miriam to be in a different color.
Different artists, when they come to characters, do they have their own interpretation compared to how, you know, you perceive them? I mean, do they have their own idea of, like, what the characters should look like? And do you usually have discussions about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the early days of developing the Arnold look, Tuck Tucker had a huge role in it. He was, he's such a phenomenal artist, such a great drawer that, I gave him free reign to evolve Arnold and Helga. You know, we started season one with them very, you know, triangular torsos and little spaghetti arms. And as we got into it, we just started needing them to do more kind of accurate anatomical poses to just to be make our storytelling and our posing more effective. And so they kind of just grew more anatomy. So I let Tuck have a lot of influence on that. And then other artists, yeah, the other directors and storyboard artists just all had their own ways of drawing them, some of which I really liked and some of which I kind of didn't. But, you know, and then when it went overseas, it would be put a little bit more on model when it got animated.
Yeah. Okay, next question. In the episode Gerald's Game, what is the inspiration behind the characters' designs?
When they're playing the game?
Yes.
We were doing kind of a sort of, it was a card game. It was a kind of a Dungeons and Dragons. And it was sort of a blend of our favorite, you know, games. And so I know that whenever you do something that's Dungeons and Dragons-y, taking you back to, you know, the days of old when knights were bold, you're just going to go straight to Monty Python. So I would say, Monty Python was probably the main influence over those designs, but then we'll kind of whatever else we needed, just for any kind of medieval joke, you know.
Oh, wow.
We draw it. And that was Python. this last winter I watched, we were on vacation and had Netflix, and so I was looking at old 90s movies. I looked at Braveheart and I looked at Kevin Costner's Robin Hood, and just like one night after the other. And we were laughing because they're both set in the same vague 1100 or something. Or
yeah.
And they borrowed all their costume ideas from the Holy Grail. They all look like extras from Monty Python.
Yeah, like it's just, it was, it's medieval. Let's go with, you know, this generic knight, this generic dragon, this generic thing. It's like, you know, there was more going on at that time, you know, and I always question, like, you know, the medieval things, like, you know, Robin Hood, King of Thieves, like, you know, what's Brian Adams got to do with all of this stuff like that, you know? he's going into craziness of all that. Yeah. Anyway, next question. In the episode The Ghost Bride, who did the wedding dress Helga found actually belong to? Did it belong to Miriam, or did it? But was it actually a? Did it belong to? Her name's gone right out of my head. Did it belong to her sister?
Olga,
yeah.
You know, I would prefer to think that's Olga's dress that she was gonna get married in to that creep. I think that would be very cool extra use of Olga's dress.
Yeah.
I congratulate Helga on stealing Olga's dress for that. It's put it to good use.
Yeah. Also, Halloween coming up as well, so good episode of the Ghost Bride, you would say.
My favorite month, October. Happy October 5th. By the way, it's October 5th. Remember in the journal? That's the day he turns the calendar page in the journal. As the
This is actually well, by the way, everybody, we're recording this on October 5th, so this is actually the day that, you know, the events of the Jungle movie kind of like moved forward pretty much. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
So we're another
deep,
important
we're
day.
We're deep in Arnold territory here. Yeah,
this is a really good day. So, okay. Next question. Phoebe's parents were played by George Takei and Jean Smart. How was this casting opportunity came about, and what was it like working with them?
Oh, they're so great. Jean Smart and George Takei, both terrific TV actors who, and, you know, I'm sure they've done everything else, but, you know, legends. And Jean Smart was just so fun to have. You're like, what? And that's kind of the joke when she has it's the episode with Emily Dickinson's Phoebe Cheats, where you see more of their home life. You know, they're having dinner. Dad does a little kind of, they're sitting at the table and dad's kind of saying grace. And you realize that the mom's from, and she tells Principal Wartz in that episode that mom's, that she's from Kentucky.
Well, so Kentucky.
Kentucky. Yeah. And which is a great gag written by Antoinette Stella, who wrote that episode. But we just thought it'd be really cool. Racial diversity and ethnic diversity was just one of the themes of the show. And so when it was time for more characters that were like you were adding on from the core group and kind of branching out and kind of meeting their families and stuff, it just seemed like that'd be really fun if her name was Heyerdahl and her mom's from Kentucky and her dad is George Takei. And so there's a very Japanese thing going on there, but it's also, you know, not. And so we really had fun with that. We were just kind of mixing it up. But, you know, when Sulu came in, you know, to record, I was in hog heaven. You know, one of the original Star Trek players was in. Yeah. And he was a total charmer, very funny. That session went really well. Andy McAfee, who plays Phoebe, was everybody had a ball with that story. It's such a funny story that when the statue first comes to life and the thunder and lightning, it's a crazy story.
Right episode.
Oh yeah, and I should say Emily Dickinson was no slouch either. God, now I'm forgetting the name of the actress who played Emily Dickinson.
Oh, that's in the Hey Arnold Wikia. I'm sure someone will look it up and tell us. So
she was so funny. You know, she had a whole take on Emily Dickinson too. So I was like, it was a wild session. Anyway,
yeah. So my job. I'm surprised they didn't get away with the getting George Takei to do with the line. You know, like I'm a Phoebe's dad from Hey Arnold, not a doctor. Anyway, let's move on to the last Hey Arnold related question, at least for the original run. Were there ever any plans to identify Fuzzy Slippers in the original show? So that's basically season 1 to season 5. If so, how would it have come about?
Great question. I love Fuzzy Slippers. It's part of Gerald's whole kind of Gerald's mystique. He seems to have some kind of network in the city of people in the know. And Fuzzy Slippers, we didn't come up with a Fuzzy Slippers story by the time we had done the first 5 seasons yet. And in making the show, I learned from Steve Ellison, who was our music editor, worked with Jim Lang. And Steve Ellison would often cut those remixes at the end when we have special credit sequences. And he was very good at hip hop and remixing. And he had done some work for Snoop Dogg, who professed to be a big Arnold fan. And whenever Steve would tell me about Snoop Dogg, he'd go, well, you know, he loves Hey Arnold. And I was like, we got to do something with him. We should have him do a song or play a character.
That would
and
be
so
great.
I thought Snoop would be the perfect Fuzzy Slippers. And it would be one of the things that I would do if we had a season 6.
Oh, that would have been so wonderful. You know, like
any Gerald thing. I kind of want to, you know, when I think of all the different things we could do with the Hey Arnold franchise, I'd kind of like to do some kind of Gerald spinoff too.
Oh, Snoop Dogg would have been so cool as Fuzzy Slippers and like,
right?
You know, actually, you know, I think also Coolio also probably would have been a pretty cool Fuzzy Slippers as well. Like, you know, sadly he passed away just only, you know, a couple of days ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, shout out to him at the moment. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I would have preferred having Snoop Dogg as Fuzzy Slippers compared to him playing Cousin It in the Addams Family, but that's just me. So yeah. Anyway, we are going to go into the Jungle Movie now. So we are falling on a full head of steam. So let's get on to the first question of this. There's actually only two questions of this, but we'll try and go into a bit of a more in-depth discussion about it. So first question is, in the bridge scene, what was going through Arnold's mind during the bridge scene? Was it his realization for his feelings for Helga going through at that time when they're hanging off the bridge? Yeah, so.
Yeah, yeah. When there is Arnold and Gerald and Helga and they're hanging for their life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's looking at Helga and he's thinking that it's kind of all, yeah, you're really right. You know how his eyes kind of swell up?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Arnold he's thinking if this might be his last thought, oh my God, Helga completely loves me. And it's funny because he's had many opportunities. I was thinking about even when he was up on remember he climbs up to that kind of tower on the boat?
Yeah.
And Helga comes up and finds him and she's trying to confront him. He's had every reason to understand that she's in love with him. She's told him point blank at least twice by now. Mm-hmm. And so he's a little dense. But I thought that was really right when he's hanging there. He's probably thinking it's his last moment on Earth. And it's occurring to him how much that she loves him.
Yeah. I think one cool thing that I would love to have seen, you know, obviously, you know, you had to, like, you know, only do so much in the movie. But maybe given the fact that, you know, you had, like, at the very beginning of the movie, you had Helga putting that video together to, like, show him, you know, obviously trying to win the contest. Maybe one thing that would have been cool to have, like, in that moment with him to, like, flash back at all the times that Helga and him have actually been together and, like, you know, done fun stuff with each other and stuff. And, like, you know, all his realizations came in that. Yeah. So one needs to put that montage together, you know.
The movie's full of that, really. It's kind of been looking back at everything and taking stock. And it was kind of cool that we got the chance to do the Jungle Movie 15 years later. I'm sure I've told you that before.
I'm still, you know, ever since then, I'm still amazed. You know, like, it's not just the fact that, you know, it actually happened, you know, but, and also, I never told this story before, but, you know, that was actually the first movie that me and Patricia actually saw, Patricia from Old School Lane. And if it wasn't for that, I don't think me and her ever would have met. And, you know, now, you know, we're going to be getting married soon, and so, you know, that movie means thank you so much. but seriously, Craig, that movie means a lot more than you ever believe. Like, you know, I've now met the person who I want to spend the rest of my life with. You know, it's incredible.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, anyway, enough of this mushy stuff as Parol will be getting in. Let's move on to this. So maybe a bit more in-depth discussion about you know, your post-thoughts, given the fact that now we're about 5 years removed, I think, now from the Jungle Movie. So in your opinion, how successful was the Jungle Movie, looking back at everything that took place afterwards?
What a good question. Thank you to whoever asked that question.
A lot of people.
I consider it a complete success because it was something I'd wanted to make for so long. To get the chance to make it, unbelievable. You know, to finally get the chance, it was 14 years later when they said, okay, let's make the Jungle Movie. And we, you know, we started our writing it and production and everything. I was like, man, these chances don't come up very often. Where you had something, you went like Arnold went on for at least 6, 7, 8. We were about 8 years in when the everything finally was canceled in 2011. I mean, in 2002 or 2003, and then it was about 14 years later. There was just a new administration at Nickelodeon. Russell Hicks, he came in and thought, why not? Let's reboot Arnold and do something with it. And so it was easy for me to convince his administration to do the Jungle Movie. And then I got to sit down and have this chance to make it. It was unbelievable. And so having had the chance to make it that much later, when I'd been working for all those, you know, more than a decade doing other stuff and writing and having different kinds of experiences, that just made it better for me. I mean, I'd had the story got to just sit there untold, kind of simmering in the background for all that time. And, you know, I'm sure we've talked about this. Steve Vixton and I originally set out to write it. And then in 2014, Steve died. And him not being a part of it, he probably wouldn't have been a part of it in this iteration that 5 years ago, because by then he hadn't really worked with me on anything for a long time. And we were kind of estranged, really. I hadn't seen him for a while. And Steve's idea of the Jungle Movie when we were going to set out to do it was, he said, really the only reason we should do this is if he finds out that his parents have died. He thought that was way too ridiculous for Arnold's parents to be alive. And I realized when I got the chance to make it again, it was just me. There was nobody else left from that old lineup. And it was time for me to do it, you know, the way I wanted to do it. I was, you know, the only one who'd kind of survived all the years of being around for Hey Arnold and any iteration that it could be. And so I saw it as a chance for it to be like, what do I really want to say? And, you know, I listened to fans for more than a decade, and many of them would say, you know, I just can't wait to see Arnold find his parents. And I was like, well, damn it. You know, it's a cartoon. I'm going to make this thing. I'm going to tell this crazy, really ridiculous story the way I want to tell it. And they slept for 10 years. They woke up. They had to be a little stiff. And they... And then they were back to, you know, and I also, I explained too, you know, my adult kids told me, well, if you bring him back to life and you bring him home, won't that kind of wreck Hey Arnold? The thing that made him go was that he was a boy who lost something really important and was kind of making up for it by kind of being kind to everyone. And I said, oh no, it'll be cool. The parents, he'll bring him home, but they'll be kind of a little bit off from being asleep for 10 years.
Forgive me if I'm wrong. I don't know where I heard this, but wasn't like the original pitch like be like, you know, Arnold's parents come in and then his grandparents go and like retire from like and like go like have adventures elsewhere. And then obviously, you know, Arnold's parents would then become like, you know, the possessors of the boarding house. And basically they would basically.
Yeah, right. My pitch was they come home. They kind of take stock of the situation and they decide that they're going to run the boarding house and let grandma and grandpa retire.
Yeah.
But grandma and grandpa don't want to retire.
Oh,
and
then, okay.
And I thought that would be one of the struggles in the boarding house. But, you know, so to bring it back to that question, do I feel like it was a success? It was a complete success for me. It was a joy. It filled me with happiness.
Yeah.
It made so many fans so happy. Nothing that I've ever done has been as well received in my whole life.
Yeah, it's my favorite DVD. It's my favorite DVD on my shelf. I have to say,
it really is.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So this leads into our discussion for Hey Arnold Season 6. I mean, this is a question we get year in, year out, and so I will ask the question, but, you know, let's accept the answer for what it is. What's the latest on Hey Arnold Season 6? Have Nickelodeon or any network shown any interest in picking up the show for another season or even a reboot?
Right. Well, thanks for asking. You know, it's been 5 years, so it would seem like... if they were going to bite, you know, I had completely teed it up. So at the end of the Jungle Movie, it was clear that they were heading into sixth grade. Arnold and Helga were going to be a couple, kind of. They got to return to PS-118 and be kind of the sixth grade, the kings of PS-118. And mom and dad were home. So you had a ton of stuff to do. And I thought this thing, you know, season six would write itself. And I told them many times that everything was teed up and ready to go. The fact that 5 years have gone by, I don't know. The trail's pretty cold. I don't sense their Nickelodeon's wish to do it. That when people always ask, they're like, or sell it to Netflix or do this. But it's really not mine to sell. It belongs to Nickelodeon. And if they, something like that, another studio or another network or something tries to buy a show, it's an insane amount of money, because you're kind of buying... you're buying the future of it, and often you have to kind of buy them out from what they put into it. And of course, by now, Nickelodeon is tens and tens of millions of dollars into AR.
Yeah, exactly.
So it would be Nickelodeon or nothing. And believe me, I appreciate people asking. I have thought of other, I've thought of spinoffs. I've thought of movies. I've thought of so many different ways to crack that. And like, okay, you don't want to just keep doing episodes of Hey Arnold, which would be fine with me. I wouldn't care. Sixth grade and keep growing them. But my efforts to excite them about that stuff have not really worked. So it's a pretty safe bet that unless something changes at Nickelodeon, there won't be any more.
My biggest fear, I think, is that this could either be a blessing or it can either be a curse. And why I say that is because we've seen what's happened recently with the Rugrats reboot. And we said in the last year's show when we did this is that, why isn't Joe getting credited for the fact that they're telling, the same story, again, and he's not getting a writer's credit for it. Aren't you kind of worried that if Nickelodeon do bring back Hey Arnold, that they won't really continue on the story? They'll basically just say, well, we've already got these stories already that Craig and Steve and everybody else has already told. Let's just tell them again, but just put them in 3D. I mean, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I remember when there was I had no clue that the Jungle movie was going to come, that the reboot of Arnold was going to come in the, 10 years ago. And if people asked me about it, I was like, I don't know, maybe it's best for people just to kind of imagine how they'd like it to go and kind of have their own kind of personal fantasy about how it would go. And, we don't have to make it and disappoint somebody. So I'm actually thrilled that I got the chance to make the Jungle movie and take a chance even on putting it out in a time like now where people are much more, the internet is much more hating on stuff. I'm glad I did. Just like I would be glad if I got the chance to spin off Arnold and do more stuff, It gives me happiness to make stuff. So, the door's always open on my end, but it's up to Nickelodeon.
Okay. Okay, last question on Hey Arnold Season 6, and this is about Arnold and Helga's relationship. How stormy and dysfunctional would their relationship be in a Season 6? And how would it lead up to the events of Arnold leaving Hillwood with his parents and leading into what we were our next section, the Patakis?
Oh, yeah. The Patakis. Well, the idea of the Patakis was pitched, 20, more than 20 years ago. And so obviously if I had a chance to make a show where they were 15, which is what the Patakis was, it would be a fresh start for me too. I don't know what I'd do. The Patakis pitch was that Helga's 15 and Arnold has moved away with his parents.
Yeah.
And yet we hadn't even done the Jungle movie yet. Isn't that funny? It was kind of time traveling. And people asked me specifics about that kind of Pataki scenario. And it was, we had just barely sketched it out. When you were only kind of writing a pilot and doing a few drawings, you don't really know what's going to happen yet. So, and that's kind of the way I work anyway. When I made Hey Arnold, I got season after season. I was like, oh my God, I guess I better find out where his parents are.
I think with the discussions that I've had with the Hey Arnold fans, I think in their minds, I think the general consensus seems to be that Hey Arnold Season 6 happens and then Arnold and Helga have their relationship. It kind of goes off the rails. They break up and then Arnold goes away with his parents because, he's probably under the impression,
right.
Like, well,
another adventure.
Yeah, I have this opportunity to travel the world with my parents now and have all these adventures and stuff like that. And I don't have a reason to kind of be in Hillwood anymore, and so he goes off, and then Helga kind of has to pick up the fact that she has to do the Patakis after that, she becomes the main character and then has that.
That's certainly one possibility. It certainly could go that way. Mm-hmm. And Helga as a character, if Helga had her own show, my point was that I wanted Arnold, and I think Arnold and Helga are soulmates and they're gonna love each other forever. And I know Helga clearly is going to continue to be a kind of a brittle person with some real issues. And so it would be stormy no matter what. I picture them doing fine. Helga slowly kind of learning to kind of let her guard down, being more intimate and sharing her deepest thoughts with Arnold. But then she'd blow up about something and make him really mad. So it wouldn't be, she wouldn't be a little sweetheart. She would be blowing up a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it'll be like, you know, Homer and Marge or anything like that. I think obviously that's the different dynamic, but I'd be interested to see. I actually would genuinely like to be interested to see, like, here's a show, here's Arnold married to Helga and they have their own family. And, you know, I've actually seen, you know, though, again, I mentioned this fan show, Life with the Shortmans, you know, like, it was such an interesting read. I thought, oh, hey, this would be interesting to see actually come to life as a TV show. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll get into fan fiction filler. And actually, I think we are going into fan fiction filler. We're not. We're going to hit the Pataki. So, one more question on the Patakis. Would Jim Lang have done the soundtrack to the Patakis? I mean, I would say yes. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. But here's another side of it. If so, what would it sound like? What direction do you think you and Jim would talk about in regards to the Patakis if you had to say what the music would be?
That'd be cool. That's a good question. I mean, yes, I would work with Jim because he's, you know, part of the DNA of Hey Arnold. And it would be fun. It'd be fun to explore it. They're older now. They, you know, in the Patakis, it seems like it's contemporary, like the time flip to now and they're teenagers. I think it'd be something like that. I don't think it would be retro. I wouldn't, if I was to do it, I wouldn't be saying, oh, it's now it's 2004 or whatever. Yeah. That doesn't interest me. It'd be more fun to do it contemporary. And I always thought Lang's music was really contemporary anyway. A kind of a timeless thing. Like if you listen to his music from the late 90s, it sounds pretty contemporary still. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what we'd do to be different, to be more like Helga as a teenager would be a little more punk. So I don't know what we would have done. It would have been cool to get the chance.
Yeah. Okay, next question. So we're going into fan fiction filler now. So here's this question. Which parent does Helga think less of them? Who thinks less of the most? Is it Bob or is it Miriam?
I think she would be harder on Bob. I think she loves Miriam a little bit better. Bob, I think Bob she would kind of punish, where Miriam, I think they made some good connections.
Yeah, okay. Next question. This one's interesting. It's actually circled around Edmund, funnily enough. So, not this for quite a question actually we ever had in this anniversary show.
Shout out to Edmund.
Yeah, Edmund. So, what would Edmund's relationship be like with Wolfgang today? Would they have remained friends? Would Edmund have later regretted hanging out with Wolfgang to begin with? I mean, where are Wolfgang and Edmund, you know, in the future?
Do you think? I like that. I think actually Edmund, you know, we played them pretty dumb. You know, they're kind of morons most of the time. But I think Edmund would become a little more reflective as he got older and ultimately would realize he was sick of Wolfgang being the boss, being in charge of him. And so I think of the two of them, I'd expect Edmund to kind of grow up and kind of become smart finally and get his act together. I don't know if they'd stay together. They're those kind of friends of convenience where you, like, he probably lives next door to him and Wolfgang always bullied him and he just had to do what he said. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So next question on that. In fanfiction filler, so what do you think of the theories that Helga is autistic? Some people point out that she exhibits familiar traits such as preferring not to be cuddled or avoiding physical contact, sometimes having difficulty understanding how other people are feeling, and even also avoiding eye contact. I mean, is that what you set out to do with Helga at all?
No, I mean, I wouldn't call her autistic. I would say that if you look at the if you look at most of the cartoon characters in the Hey Arnold world, they're all kind of on some kind of part on the spectrum. And so, which you could argue kind of everybody's somewhere on the spectrum, but I would say Helga is definitely highly functionally somewhere on the spectrum. And the symptoms of, or the, you know, the characteristics of, like, she doesn't really, not really comfortable being touched, but I don't picture her avoiding eye contact.
Okay.
But yeah, they're like all the people I work with. Everybody is super sensitive, smart, and creative. And, you know, we're all on somewhere on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hopefully highly functional.
Yeah. Okay. We are going to go into Party Wagon now. What was the inspiration behind Party Wagon? So how did the idea first come about?
Wow, so nice to have a party wagon question. Well, you know, I'd finished my 5-season and 1-movie run of Hey Arnold, and I went over to Cartoon Network because an exec, Linda Simensky, was there, and I wanted to work with her. And she gave me a chance to pitch it. And it was originally pitched as a show, with the kind of elevator pitch being, what if in a wagon train in you know, the Old West, in a wagon train of these completely uptight, you know, square, God-fearing pioneers, there was one wagon, a party wagon, that only had like all the losers and gamblers and rapscallions, and they all were there.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, and they were the party wagon, and they were like, where would that wagon be? It would be the last one. It would be on the very end, and they'd always be in danger of being kicked off the wagon, and they never get west. That was my pitch. And I wanted to work with Randall P. McDuff character is another avatar for me. And I kind of, he was like, he's really only 15, 16, I think. And he hasn't had any experiences yet. He's already in trouble. He has to get married. And then the wedding kind of turns into a brawl and a riot. And he runs for his life. And it basically is like, if a kid started in Maine, in civilized America, and worked his way west until the train line stopped and you just had to go on foot. And so that was basically my premise. I was a big fan of the West. I love the West. I love, you know, I grew up on the West Coast. I've always lived on the West Coast. I grew up in Washington State and the stories of the, and lived in Portland. You know, Oregon was in the old days in the middle of the 19th century, everybody migrated west. At a certain point when they reached a kind of a fork, they could either go north to Oregon and be settlers, you know, and kind of homesteaders, or be gold diggers and go south to California's gold fields. And I just thought that was very funny. I thought it was funny that everybody went west at once. Everybody was trying to kind of run away from their problems in the east and reinvent themselves in the west. And if you look at westerns, which I love, all the westerns have that kind of storyline where somebody started out somewhere and things went wrong, and then they just kind of headed off west and no one knew what become of them, which I think is incredible now in this day and age where, you know, our cell phones and our, you know, we're just basically connected. Everybody knows where we are at every moment.
Yeah.
The idea of being able to run away from your problems and start over struck me as incredibly cool. And then I thought, I've got all these actors that I've worked with, the voiceover actors, you know, Dan Castellaneta and Maurice LaMarche, and, you know, Pamela Hayden played Sublimity Jill. And it just went on and on. I mean, we had such a good, funny group of characters to work with. And Randy was played by Sean Astin, Sam from Lord of the Rings. And he was in the middle of shooting Lord of the Rings when he came to play Randy for me.
Ooh,
and
wow.
I was so thrilled that I hadn't even seen it yet, and I knew Lord of the Rings was going to be really cool. And his stories were unbelievable. He was coming up from New Zealand, and he'd actually shot the first, he really did shot the bulk of the movies, and now they were going back to New Zealand to shoot the extra stuff because Fellowship did so well that Peter Jackson knew he had a home run, and he got a bunch more money even that he could pour into reshoots and things to kind of beef up the 12-hour saga. And so Sean was in the middle of that, and he's such a joy. He's such a funny, sweet guy that made it really fun. I kind of felt like I was on this, all that kind of running away and kind of hitching a ride on a wagon and kind of heading out somewhere into the wilderness had that kind of vibe too, that Sean had kind of brought with all of his kind of New Zealand stories. And so it all seemed very, it was very charmed. And I worked on it for a couple of years. We premiered it, I think in 2004. And just played on Cartoon Network, and that was it. I made Party Wagon burned discs and gave them to my friends. Like, hey, here's this Western I made.
Yeah, and, that's awesome.
And so I really loved it. I'm you know, there's certain kinds of stories that I really love to tell, and so I would tell a Western in a heartbeat. And I collected so much material and books, and kind of sat around reading stories from the trail.
Yeah,
and it was just really fun. My brief Western period.
Yeah, like I mean, some of the more notable westerns, like I mean, there was this Paddy Wagon and Thinker, then Nickelodeon decided to do Rango at one point, and that was quite
right.
Yeah,
Rango
yeah.
came out a little bit after that.
After that, yeah, like, yeah, oh, exactly. You know, so there was a peak interest, I think, in westerns. I think again around that time. Yeah.
Well, the films I'd seen, Unforgiven had come out. There were some really good ones that had come out that made me think of things I wanted my story to be like.
Yeah. Okay. The last question for Paddy Wagon is, in the Paddy Wagon, who was the one who sewed Randall's clothing in the middle of the night?
Oh, Ornery Sue.
Oh.
Watch it again.
Watch it again.
It's Ornery Sue. Yeah. And she's sitting in the front. You see her listening to him talk about all of his hopes and dreams. And then you see her afterwards when he's sitting there saying he's trying to write to Aunt Cordelia. He's trying to write, like, I don't know how this miraculously happened. My clothes got mended. And she's sitting in the front going, you know, what an idiot.
Okay. We're going to go on to a Ready, Jet, Go question. And it's more about the future, really, rather than what's come before. So you mentioned last year that you were going to record some new songs for a series. Are we going to be expecting Ready, Jet, Go anytime soon?
Oh, we were recording songs that I'd written for the Ready, Jet, Go movie.
Oh.
That we are currently making right now. And we're making it for Universal.
Awesome.
Just like we made the Dinosaur Train movie for Universal.
Yeah.
We're basically the same model, an 80-minute feature that is in animation right now, and I'll be going into post on it in the spring.
Yeah.
So
that's
keep
really
an
cool.
eye out for it. I really don't have a date. I don't know when, but it will be one of those things that, just like the Dinosaur Train movie, will be streamable somehow through Universal and PBS.
Okay. Well, no doubt we'll keep our eye out for it. So, awesome. Okay. We're going to move into any other business. So, we're going to fire through all these other questions. Someone asks, I think we actually got a few questions on pitching shows and also some how to get ideas off the ground. So, the big question is, what are the biggest do's and don'ts when pitching a show to a studio or a production company?
Do's and don'ts. I mean, I would say when you come in to pitch a show, have a pretty thorough idea of it as a show. Because often if you come in and you get to two or three questions in and you really don't know what would happen, they get a little impatient with you and the pitch is pretty quickly over. So if they're going to want to know, like, tell me in depth about the characters and be able to kind of talk through. I when I make a pitch, I've always got about, I don't know, 5 or 6 stories at least that are a little kind of fat paragraph, what we call like a log line of 5 or 6 stories that you should be prepared to be able to pitch to them if they asked you. If you're at the point in the pitch where they're asking you questions like that, you're doing great. But if you get a couple of questions in and you're like, I don't know, they'd be like, this meeting's over, you know? And I've been in meetings like that. I'm of the opinion, development people really want to be involved. They don't want you to come in with a finished product and go, here's my show. Do you want to air it on your network?
Yeah.
They want to get to work with you on it and be a part of its creation. And that's just something that's happened over my career. I've watched development people get more and more that way, where they kind of want to feel like they had a hand in it too. So to flatter them, I like to come in with like, well, what about this? Like, well, if I was pitching Paddy Wagon and I had not much more than that elevator pitch I did, I don't know. Then they go west. What would they find? I don't know. You know, and so I might be a little bit like that. And I've felt that where people were disappointed, like, ugh, you know, why did I give this guy a half hour of my time? And we're 10 minutes in and I know we're done. I'm used to people wanting to kind of collaborate with me. And so many things that I've done, I got started and then I kind of realized what the thing was once I got underway. Hey Arnold was like that. Dinosaur Train was like that. You try to think about all the things that could happen, but it's such a collaboration. You're working with people, so many people trying to kind of convince and kind of work your way through it. You know, that's what I would say, is that be prepared, have the stories and the characters pretty well figured out in your mind.
Yeah.
The don'ts. I love the in a do's and don'ts. I always think of my friend Linda Simensky, who I've known forever, and Brad Pattengill, her the two of them were the development team at PBS, where I worked to make Dinosaur Train and Ready, Jet, Go. And Linda is so funny. I've known her forever. I've known her since the early Rugrats when I was at PBS. She was a junior executive in New York for Nick. And Linda hated the following things. These are don'ts. No pirates, no Vikings, no clowns. it's so funny. He picks up, someone's got a clown show. I'm like, oh, it's not going to work here. But she also said, don't try to pitch it as a rap. she said, imagine if you will, people have come into my office with a boombox and hit go and started rapping.
Oh, their pitch. That's cringe. Oh, that's so cringe.
What's really funny about that too is that if I picture that in my mind, all I can see is the look on Linda's face.
Yeah.
She would have been just like kill me
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I can probably imagine.
But anyway, I mean, believe in what you're pitching. You know, feel very passionately about what you're pitching, mm-hmm. and have it as figured out as you can when you go in.
Cool. Okay. Next question. The final season of Disney's The Owl House starts next week. Have you seen the show? And what do you think of Dana Terrace as an executive producer?
Oh, well, I actually don't know her at all, but I have seen the show, and I assume, you know, I think the stuff that's on Disney right now, currently the stuff that's being made for 6 to 11 at Disney is some of the strongest stuff out there.
I agree.
Their production is terrific. Their pipeline is terrific. When they set out to make a show and they want to give it a look, it's funny, with the Owl House that I've seen, I'm not as affected by the look of it as like Amphibia, for example. I feel is another contemporary show of that has a really cool art direction, but they really all do. They all have good art direction, very solid animation and storytelling. And I'm going to plug Natasha Klein, whose show is going to come out next year, Primos.
Awesome.
I know that's going to be a beautiful show. And I think she landed at the right place. She's working with all the same crews, people that she's working with, crews that have come off of Owl House, that have come off of Amphibia, come off of Big City Greens. So,
oh, yeah. Well, Gravity Falls was
a very talented bunch of people.
Yeah, well, Gravity Falls was the primordial ooze that kind of like brought all these people to light. So I think Gravity Falls, I think, has a lot to thank about for, you know, the fact that they got all this, great talent that's over there at the moment. So, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Next question. Have you ever seen the Pixar film Turning Red? Some people believe it's a positive movie that explores taboo topics of being a teenage girl, while others say it's an average animated movie that doesn't shine as much as the other Pixar classic. Where do you stand on the whole Turning Red debate?
That's really funny. I loved Turning Red.
I did too.
I think Dami Shi is one of those great talents that she's on fire right now. Everything she touches is going to be great. And I've seen all the Pixar films, and I've watched them go from like they cannot fail to making kind of duds, in my opinion. And some of the stuff still really shines, and some of their storytelling I'm not as into. But I thought Turning Red, the storytelling was good. The character design was great. And the way that the characters were animated, which is their specialty. Pixar, none of their films are badly animated. They're all incredibly beautifully animated. But something about the life that was in Turning Red was exceptional.
Yeah,
and I'm just looking to see what else Dami Shi's going to make, because I think she's fantastic.
I think this year sets Pixar in a direction that they know where to go in, and that Turning Red was the success, and Lightyear unfortunately was the dud, and which as a Toy Story fan, obviously, you know, makes me feel pretty sad. But
right.
At the same time, I think some lessons learned. I think need to be learned here. I think at Pixar.
Yeah, well, they're capable of making things that aren't incredibly perfect. You know,
yeah,
like
exactly,
for a long
yeah.
time. For a long time, their rep was that they could not do anything wrong.
Okay, next question. You once mentioned in 2006 that yourself and Francesca Marie Smith did something Hey Arnold-related at a graduation ceremony at Stanford. Could you elaborate on what that was and what the reaction was to it?
Wow, 2006?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, well, Franny has an amazing amount of education, and she was up at Stanford graduating, and she went on to do, you know, postgraduate studies at USC and is now teaching at USC. So she is an academic for sure. She thrives in the academic community. And the thing that we did, I guess you could call it a Hey Arnold thing, was she in graduating was in some kind of top group of people, and they all were asked to invite their favorite teacher from their K to 12 years of school, public school. And Francesca had been homeschooled her whole life. So she chose me because she thought of me as like her teacher during the Hey Arnold years, you know, so as her really bringing me in as kind of her mentor. And so that was really fun. That was fun for us because the room was full of people who had, you know, math degrees, and they had their high school math teacher with them. And so Franny and I made for a kind of a funny pair, but I was incredibly flattered to think that that I had had that kind of importance on her pre-12. She'd gone through high school by the time she finished with Helga and was taking college classes while she was still playing Helga. And then, of course, she came back as an adult to play Helga for the Jungle movies. So yeah, those relationships were really important. I'd probably say Franny and I probably had it was the most key relationship of all the kid actors, because I don't know, man, Franny was sort of, she kind of ruled. she was so extraordinary that everybody wanted to write for her. I'll just put it that way.
Awesome. Okay. Let's quick fire some of these quicker questions, and then we'll try and find time for like the longer ones, but I'll go with this one. Do you have any plans to repitch Skyrat in the future? If so, how would it differ from the original pitch?
Oh, that's a great question. I was going to bring Skyrat back to Cartoon Network as a long form movie. Awesome. And that plan has just gone kablooey. Because they have Cartoon Network and Warner Brothers and HBO Max are now owned by a new company.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry, Craig. And I just hate that situation so much.
It put an end to a bunch of stuff we were developing, and that's not just me. You know, it was kind of rippled across many projects.
You know something?
So I don't think it's personal.
I'm sorry to go political on this, but let me safely say this. All these things that are doing for tax write-offs, right? You know, if I was a politician, I would be writing a law to say, look, if you write something off for tax purposes, it immediately becomes public domain. And therefore, you know, why should they profit off it? Or why should they keep it in a vault? Like, you know, it's like,
Totally. I'm feeling sad right now because I've got, unfinished business, things I was developing. And that was where I was hoping to kind of bring out a couple of things.
Oh.
And so we'll see. I mean, there might be a future for that, but that was crazy, man. I was about to bring Skyrat back.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so infuriated.
It's a project that's very dear to me.
Hopefully
we'll someday see light of day.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Craig. I can't believe you got caught up in all of that. That makes me steamed. I wasn't steamed enough on the Aaron Patricia podcast, but seriously, wow. That sucks. What's it like living near Los Angeles, and any advice on relocating to LA?
Oh, well, LA, my favorite city. That's saying a lot. I've been here for more than 30 years. This is my 34th year in Los Angeles. And I've been here for most of my adult life, and I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else. Seattle, where I was born, or Portland, where I went to school and was a clay animator for Will Vinton out of college. And so this is the place where I spent the most time. And I'm very fond of it. Los Angeles is a kind of place that kind of welcomes everybody. It kind of doesn't judge you. They don't care. You know, like you might feel, people might come here and be like, God, how am I ever going to make friends in this megapolis with all this traffic? And, you know, kind of, it can be a little dystopian as well. But I'm currently in Pasadena, and I love it. And I think that this is where I found I came here because I was kind of looking for my tribe, and I found them. And it's not kind to everybody. Some people come here and they cannot get that needle in a haystack that I found. I found several needles in several haystacks, and really things happened in a lucky, cool way for me that I know can't happen for everybody.
But, yeah.
You know, I just would tell people you can learn animation almost anywhere now, but if you want to go to where animation really the industry is, it's here.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna ask you this one now. What's your opinion on the quote on the hashtag New Deal for Animation? Do you think creators and their staff have a harder time negotiating good deals for pay and conditions today compared to their counterparts in the 80s and the 90s?
Oh, well, yeah, the shakeup we were just talking about, where a large reality show programmer had apparently so much cash that they could buy. When I think of HBO Max, which was the way it was set up for me at Cartoon Network, was they were kind of our parent umbrella company, and we would stream on HBO Max, and that seemed very solid to me. It seemed like, wow, HBO Max is like Cadillac of streamers. Beautiful, their content's incredible, and I love watching HBO Max and all the things they have on their network, including all the classic Warner stuff and all the classic Cartoon Network stuff, and much, much more than that beyond. So I thought, how could that possibly change? I'm set. I found a new group of people to work with. I'm going to make content for them. And now everything's just up in the air. And when I spoke to my bosses about it, about the changes, they said, well, there was about 5 years of big spending, which would include the Netflix push for original animation, which turned the town upside down. And and Netflix fell on their face this year, much to our surprise. Mm-hmm. And now a reality show programmer owns HBO Max.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what will happen. So all I can say is that I've lived in good times and bad. I've worked in the 80s, I worked in the 90s, I worked in the aughts, I worked in the teens, and I'm working now. And I've seen it go swing back and forth. So it looks like we're in a weird hangover now where everybody feels bad about all the money they spent. I'm very sad. To me, the most important thing about this is that it kind of threatens original programming, you know, original cartoons. Cartoon Network was all about originals.
And yeah.
So was it, really. You know, Nick, not so much. They're kind of more into branding and you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Hollywood High and stuff like that, where they kind of add franchises like Disney does. But Cartoon was like a scrappy original maker. And I feel like that's very much threatened right now. And maybe it'll take a couple of years for good times to come back. But right now people are kind of reeling from
my biggest fear is that, like, you know, oh hey, you can watch this cartoon show and it's really, really good, but unfortunately it only exists on these DVDs and you have to pay like $800 for them on eBay. That's my biggest fear, that we're going to end up, that's the way.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I agree. I think the advantage of the streamers is like, well, like HBO Max had all the classic Warner cartoons. You could basically go look at a 1945 Bob Clampett cartoon on HBO Max.
You can't do
and
that.
I thought,
yeah.
Finally, you know, a place that archives thousands of hours of really incredible content, and it's available for us to stream. I thought, finally, that's where it should be. But you know, there's a lot of decisions being made on a corporate level.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't understand it all.
No, we don't understand it either. Anyway, I'll end on this final question, and it's about Dan Povenmire. I think.
Oh, good old Dan.
Yeah, good old Dan. Have you ever watched the show Phineas and Ferb, created by Dan Povenmire? There's a character in the show called Isabella, who design looks almost exactly like Helga. Is this a coincidence, or did Dan purposely design Isabella as a tribute to Helga Pataki?
Let's call it a tribute. I think it's very funny how, I mean, for one thing, like the Helga design, I often think of Angelica on Rugrats, who I was around. I didn't design Angelica. She was designed by Peter Chung,
yeah,
who made the original Rugrats pilot and is a titanic designer. He's an incredibly talented guy. So he did the first Angelica. I think Arlene did Chucky and Tommy. And then it kind of, after that, all the rest of the characters got designed in that first season when I was there. And when I made Helga, I wanted to do another kind of, you know, pigtail girl. And the bow and the pigtails were just so big. That's kind of, and the monobrow was kind of my way of doing the pigtail bully that there are many, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it's kind of apples and oranges. And when I see designs that make you think of, God, when I first saw, what's the name of the kid on Family Guy? The one with the Arnold head.
Oh, like, Stewie. Stewie, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Stewie. I was like, okay. someone else has an Arnold head. But, yeah, when designs go around, there's only so many looks you can give. And I'm no doubt Dan was sitting there kind of on the Helga tip when he designed that character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dan was a director on the first two seasons of Hey Arnold. So he was around, you know, Dan did some wonderful, he did the baseball, he directed opera. Dan directed some really, Big Caesar. Mm-hmm. He worked on some really unforgettable Arnold shows. So I'd like to think it left an impression on it.
Yeah, big shout out to Dan. Okay, so our hour is up. So any shout outs you want to give before we wrap things up?
I just want to say thanks to the fans for tuning in. Happy 2 days from now, happy anniversary for Hey Arnold and happy birthday, Arnold. Mm-hmm. And yeah, thank you for your questions. I never would stop trying to spin off Hey Arnold. I was thinking as the fortunes of Nickelodeon have kind of come and gone and new people come in and they talk about the things they're looking for, I'm always like, oh, you want long form? Okay. And I realized the other day that when I'd heard they were going to look for something like that, I'd written up a couple pages for a kind of a Gerald movie. Like it was an Arnold movie. It was kind of Gerald centric.
Yeah.
Because of the urban legends. And I was reading through it. I was like, this is a fucking killing script. This would be really, really good. And so, you know, like there never would ever be an end to the kind of stories that we could do with the show. And I feel people's frustration, but you just need to know the basics are Nickelodeon owns it. Nickelodeon controls its future. I'm always, you know, kind of cordial and professional with everybody. So,
yeah.
You know, I try to get along with everybody. And if people are going to do it or they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's funny how stuff kind of comes in and out of style, but, which I kind of don't have any control over, but you know, if I get the chance, they told me, they said, if we ever decide to do something Arnold, you'll be the first person to find out.
Well, Craig, I mean, outside of Hey Arnold, I mean, like obviously we've got the Ready, Jet, Go movie coming out soon. I mean, obviously any fans with kids are going to obviously want to check that out. Is there any other way we can support you, or like, is any other like, you know, projects you got down the line that we could, you know, obviously the Hey Arnold fans would like to check out?
Yeah. I mean, you can follow me on Instagram where I will always be telling people, what's next. You know, I've been thinking the original art that I've been doing over the last few years, kind of during the pandemic and a lot of my sketchbooking, I've been kind of thinking of my original stuff I might turn into posters and put up, you know, maybe put up an Etsy shop or something like that, and make it a place where people can get sort of unofficial, not Nickelodeon, but, you know, unofficial Arnold stuff. Because I feel how much people would love it.
Do it. You know, like there's a place called the Mystery Shack right now where you can get like, you know, unofficial Disney merchandise, and like, you know, that's done terrific. You know, like I'm sure everyone wants to see you make posters of, like, all your art.
I would actually love to make Arnold swag. You know, like,
oh yeah, dude, do it.
Clocks and
do it.
Unfortunately, I don't think I can. I think that stuff would be too specifically, you know, against the, you know, the consumer.
Well, ask the guys over at the Mystery Shack and see how they do it, because they've done it, and they've also got endorsements from, like, you know, the Owl House crew and like the Amphibia crew and even Gravity Falls crew. So, like, you know, maybe there's something you can do. So, yeah,
I'll look into it.
Yeah, defo. Okay. All right, Craig. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show once again. And we wish you all the best. Happy anniversary.
See ya.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Craig. Have a good day.
Bye, everybody. See ya.